and thank you for joining us on KVCR for KVC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming, welcoming author Andrea Grant. Andrea will certainly be touching on your latest, Modern Natives, an illustrated collection of reimagined Coast Salish myths throughout this conversation. But first, I'd like to introduce people to you, which is a very multifaceted look. As author, poet, model, filmmaker, and more, there's a lot at andreagrant.com. Now, beyond studying creative writing and writer's grants in college, were you always a storyteller? I can imagine a little girl here forcing her parents and neighbors to watch the latest rendition of The Greatest Show on Earth, or, you know, something to that effect.
Well, I was a little more introverted than that.
Okay.
I was always writing stories and illustrating them and then folding the paper in a way and cutting. You know, I was very multimedia from a young age and making little books.
Wow.
Even at the point where I had to do school projects and I would type things on the typewriter and then my mother would help me like affix like wallpaper to the outside and make a cover with a binding. So I amassed their collection, I guess. And I've always been fascinated with mythology and then Western fairy tales, if you want to call them Western, but fairy tales in general, and how stories intersect. And then at a certain age, you're always obsessed with popular culture, right? That goes into the stories, too. Like, Michael Jackson will show up, or Cyndi Lauper or something in a story. But, yeah, I guess I've always mixed medium.
That's really cool. And what age were you when you were talking about doing this? With you typing it out, your mom helping to do the covers and whatnot. How old were you at this point?
I think I was DIY around, like, 7, 8. And then by the time I was 10... I wanted everything to look more like a magazine or more professional.
Oh, wow. If people go to, again, andreagrant.com, I'd like to hear about a few of the spoken word films at your homepage. One is a spoken word film preview, The Bones of Our Never-Sesters. And that's quite a way of saying that, especially once a person finds out what we're talking about with these never-sesters. This is something that went on throughout the United States, throughout Canada. Talk to us about this one, please, The Bones of Our Never-Sesters.
Well, I had made 2 spoken word films, one about being a modern native, kind of, and taking the knowledge from the ancestors, and then another one called Night Swimming, which I wanted something about the power of water as it corresponds to feminine emotion. But with The Bones of Our Never-Sesters, there was something I started to write, and it stuck with me, and I thought, it's interesting how the government had denied for so long. Oh, there were never residential schools. Nobody was ever taken from their parents.
Right.
And then, if you remember, it was over the last few years, like there were these monsoon rainstorms and all these little bones would wash up in unmarked graves. And then it became undeniable. And so I thought, what about these little souls? They are our ancestors, but they never got to have children, husbands, wives, and what do we do with these unmarked graves and how do we honor them? Of course, we have our own ways and our own ceremonies, but it was overwhelming. It would sometimes be 400 bones or 1,200 bones rising up, and just they wanted to be heard. So I started to write about that and how it affects the land and how it affects the survivors and how hearing about these things that are emotionally moving affect all of us, because it's the idea of missing children too.
Yes.
Because I'm sure a lot of parents didn't know what happened to their children. They were just one day not in communication or something. But Hansel and Gretel was a myth for me. It was about, you know, children being kicked out by the stepmother because there wasn't enough food in the house because they were poor, and then sent on this journey. And I thought that would be an interesting fairy tale to weave in with our never-sesters.
Absolutely. I don't know if I just went into this with one of the most heavy things I could have instead of some of the other stuff that's coming up. But because, I mean, through my work here, there's so much that I've, you know, beyond just being in the news, I mean, as you were stating, at these schools or the sites of former schools, in some cases, It's not like somebody found a bone or stumbled across a grave. We're talking about the entire backyard of a school being a series, dozens, if not hundreds, of unmarked graves. And it's really horrific what was going on, let alone kids being adopted away from their families, and not just away from their families, but quite purposely adopted to the other end of the country so that there would be this separation. Just, it was horrific what was going on for so long, and all things relative, recent times.
Attempted genocide.
Yes.
And trying to kill the culture. And that just, to me, shows how resilient Native people are. But I've worked with some elders in terms of being cultural advisors on most of my projects. And they tell me stories, too, about what it was really like, or what it was like when some of those schools started to be shut down, and how the people celebrated the freedom. Many of those sadly were affected. There's been a lot of court cases, even in recent years, where the survivors have been suing, you know, this should not have happened to me, and they're traumatized. And there's actually, sadly, a high suicide rate among survivors, which I don't know if people really realize that. It's sort of something that
you don't hear.
Tell you.
No, there's a lot that goes with that. It's absolutely incredible when you can hear about something like this, but once you start reading about more and more and just how much of it there was, it's something that really unfathomable for a person, really. I cannot imagine it. It's not something that anybody could, really. That's The Bones of Our Neversesters, and that's a spoken word film preview. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Andrea Grant. Her latest book is Modern Natives, an illustrated collection of reimagined Coast Salish myths. But she's much more than an author. She's a creative in many aspects. You're listening to KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. There's more at andreagrant.com, including another spoken word film called Modern Natives. And from that, Andrea, I have this in quotes: "The bones of my ancestors burned beneath my ankles, and there was a certain amount of regret. Speak for us, for we have no voice." And so this is about storytelling, but very specific to you and, let's say, some people who have grown up in a similar situation, and that is of mixed heritage.
Yes, and I think there's a desire for people who are mixed to learn more about their Native heritage. It's so beautiful and so lush. There's a feeling of seeking. For me, my father became very connected and lived on Vancouver Island. And really, when he was ready, he met relatives and became friends with carvers. And he was always an artist and had a great experience and taught me a lot. The medicine, if you will, the healing arts. But I was always in a quest to meet my family where my grandfather was from. And it was different things through my graphic novel, Minx. A lady introduced me to the communications chief, and he invited me to Penelicut Island, which is a tiny Gulf island off of Vancouver Island. And you need to take a ferry to get there, and there's only 300 people that live there. He gave me a stack of binders and books and archival materials and said, "We really like the story that you've written. Here's a wealth of material. Like, please do something with this, because a lot of this has never been seen or adapted." So it was literally typewritten papers and binders and handwritten notes and so much stuff. And that to me was such a gift and such a representation of my calling in a way. So that's part of what inspired me. I always loved to do spoken word and loved to do recording. I made an album back in the day in 2003 that seems to do all right on Spotify. People seem to still want to listen to the poems. People still like to be read to, I'm finding. But I really wanted to take it into audiovisual. And for Modern Natives, I wanted to have different Native faces that would represent the younger generation who are carrying on the stories in their own ways. So I filmed in a lot of different locations. It was my first film that I created. So, of course, I went to New York and shot some scenes. found a place called Indian Alley, which is very historical in Los Angeles. It's one block. It used to be a mission, and natives are invited to do murals. So it was a wonderful, beautiful display and a great place to film. And then, of course, I needed to go to the Pacific Northwest and film in Canada. I got to film with one of my favorite elders, Florence James. And I got to use different faces and have different people recite parts of the poem that they felt connected to.
Nice.
And so I think it's a really interesting montage to have. It's everybody coming together.
We see this during it. When a person watches this, there's a combination of images, some of you, some of, oh, nature. There's a lot in there. And there's occasionally, as we hear your voice, your words, we see these other people mouthing the words. Then at the end of this, just before the credits roll, you're all gathered to say, we are modern natives. And then yeah. I have to say, Andrea, it's really nice to have everyone sort of cracking up at the end. I'm glad you kept that take.
Thank you.
And just, was that the first take or the 17th? I mean, there was something in the air right there.
Yeah, that was the day that we got everyone together and we were in the studio so everybody could say their piece against a blank screen. And we actually had APTN Tina House, who's an amazing reporter, and she came with her crew and films and stuff, and she prompted it at the end. She said, why don't you just say we're a modern native together? We said it and then we just started laughing. I don't know. It was a fun moment where we were just excited that we'd filmed the bulk of it and that we'd all gotten to know each other throughout the day, and it's a lot of fun.
It was a nice moment to have this because you're feeling serious. You're feeling the weight of what you've just witnessed. And then people are smiling and laughing at the end of it. And it gives a lighter air to a very heavy subject. Oh, and something in there. This is a line that struck me, and I'd love a bit of expansion on this. The line
sure.
is, and new legends are born.
Basically, that's for me a reference to us taking the knowledge that we've been given in our own way, whether that's an elder telling you a story, whether that's something you read in a book of legends. But when I think new myths are born, it's sort of like about carrying your history and your ancestry with you and going about your life. But then there are these moments. So with animal spirits, it's kind of an interesting thing. And say you're walking around a city,
okay,
and you see a lot of posters and see in your mind's eye, maybe there's a wolf that you just picture. It's maybe an ad for a movie or it's something, but there's this repetition of pattern that touches you and you think, okay, maybe this is my animal spirit or there's a reason I'm seeing this everywhere. And then what's my myth or what do I maybe want to create as a new myth? So I think my storytelling style is to take a lot of the old stories, but then reimagine them in a modern context. So sometimes there's a myth within a story, you know, a story within a story. And sometimes it's just something that goes back to the magic of the culture. So I think this is a way of preserving original myths and yet creating your own versions of it.
Nice.
In Coast Salish culture, it's interesting because storytellers are considered knowledge keepers. And everybody may share their own version of these ancient tales shaped by place, experience, memory. But you're inviting readers to step into the world where the ancestors walk among us and the unseen is just as real as the seen. There's a reason that you're permitted to reimagine some of the myths in a way that would appeal to a new generation.
That's Andrea Grant, author of Modern Natives, an illustrated collection of reimagined Coast Salish myths. Though we're talking about so much more, and much more of that can be found at andreagrant.com. And there's more as KVC Arts continues. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, Spotify, NPR One, or many other podcast sites, and more still at kvcr.org/arts. Thank you so much for listening, and of course, for your financial support any time of the year at kvcr.org/support. And speaking of which, if you were able to give during our recent spring membership campaign, thank you greatly. And since it was a brief campaign, if you didn't get a chance to contribute, you still can at kvcr.org/support. A gift in any amount helps pay for programs and the type of programming that you appreciate being here at KVCR. Back now with KVCR, I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking with Andrea Grant, poet, model, filmmaker, and author. Her latest book is Modern Natives, an illustrated collection of reimagined Coast Salish myths. Though we were just talking about a spoken word film also called Modern Natives, that's at andreagrant.com. Was Modern Natives, that is the spoken word film, written and produced in conjunction with the recent book? I ask this knowing that they are a couple or a few years apart in release, but were you working with this as a running title anyway, or you actually have been referred to, or your work is that of a modern native, and so this may just be something that comes to light and is reused, for lack of a better way of stating it at the moment.
Yeah, I originally had a different title for the book, but it was long and complicated. It was Killer Whale in the Isle of Women or something like that. But I thought, you know, since I've already used modern native singular, why not make it plural? It's an adult book that kids read up. Like, it's okay for kids to read. The characters range in age. They tend to be late teens, early 20s. So they're looking at their tribe and what they're learning and what they've been taught from a different lens, maybe thinking about how they would describe a scenario or a transforming woman, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of stories in the book that deal with modern topics. Well, I think they're all modern, but one is called The Isle of Women, and it's about the missing and murdered Indigenous women's movement in a way. So it starts out with statistics of women who go missing, and then it's about a family and two sisters, and they don't realize that their family has the power of transformation, which is something that's explored a lot in Coast Salish myth. A human will turn into a killer whale if they need to go swim the ocean, or you could transform into a wolf and you could protect your family or your pack. It deals with a girl from the tribe being abducted, and then there's this magical isle where women go and practice their ceremony. And so these two sisters get whisked away by their mother, their auntie, their grandmother, and they watch them transform into animal spirits. And then they go and they rescue the kidnapped girl and avenge her, essentially. And it's left a little open-ended. But again, that redemption, you know, there's a close to it. There's a consequence for villains. And I think that's in any story you see, whether you're watching a movie, whether you're watching superhero stuff, you want to see the villains put into jail or, exterminated or whatever the plot is and how dark it is. Something satisfying about that.
Oh, there has to be some sort of resolution, whether it's revenge or justice or just resolution. There has to be something. You can't, you know, it can't be a cliffhanger. This brings me to something that I feel like I should have known about, but I didn't. The Laguna Beach Pirate Tower. I didn't even know of this, Andrea, until I was reading about Night Swimming. This is one of your other spoken word films. Please talk to us about Night Swimming and so many symbolic elements within this. The water, for example, that's allegorical in and of itself.
Well, yes, I really wanted to do a film that was set in California and explore the range of water and perhaps as an allegory for feminine emotions. You know, there's a tempest inside of me sometimes, a rainstorm happening. And where you're talking about in Laguna, that was an amazing discovery because I lived here for a few years now and I'd never heard of Victoria Beach. But it has this castle tower, and you have to get there by a certain time of day, like by 4 o'clock. You don't want to go there as the tide comes in, and then you can't walk over there at all. Mm-hmm. But I guess there's a staircase in it, and I think it's locked now. But people used to use it to climb up to shore. There's a different stairway that you take normally, but it just is so striking and magical. So I did a lot of research. Is there anything unusual with any of the beaches or any locations that we use that people are not that familiar with? And I don't think it wasn't very crowded at that beach. I mean, sure noticed people scampering when the tide came in and not wanting to be caught on the wrong side of the rocks. And it was funny for one of the scenes where I sat on a rock. I intended to immerse, like I was wearing a dress, and I intended to go into the water a little bit. But when I sat down there, somebody had built a little sandcastle.
That addresses a question that I had. In the lines that you're speaking of, building fairy tale castles in the sand, and indeed, we see you sitting next to one. So I had it. I want to know if you built it, or maybe if it was, okay, Bob, go build me a sandcastle. We'll get to that shot in a second. Or if you found
it. It was just there, like it had been put there intentionally just for that sequence.
That's wonderful. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was a really great coincidence.
You're listening to KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Andrea Grant. Her latest book is Modern Natives, an illustrated collection of reimagined Coast Salish myths. Though at her website, simply andreagrant.com, there's a lot more to her. Photographs, blogs, past and present, links to her graphic novel work and other projects. Also within Night Swimming, we're talking about how water is such a theme. One of the things is that how swimming in the ocean can be cleansing, or what really struck me is that how a thunderstorm feels incredibly satisfying when one is going through a romantic breakup. Oh, wow. I mean, you know, that just takes a person probably to any of their breakups, and you can assign something right there.
Yeah.
And the exhilaration, there we go, the next line. This is straight from your website, Dancing in the Rain. So all this around water, were you thinking about water and the various aspects of this came to you, or were you thinking of various things and then you realized, wait, water is the common element here?
You know, these are long pieces. They're 6 to 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
They're short films, so they adhere to that length. And usually I start with an idea and a singular poem that stands on its own. And then I think about how could I build on it, or how could I bring more water language and imagery into this? And so day one, we filmed at the beach and got those great shots. Day two, it was in a pool at night, and I'd gone to the Indian Alley that I spoke of earlier and shot some footage with the paintings and the graffiti in the background, just to have some texture. But then it was a pool, and I used to always film on the hottest days of the year. So it was nice to go into the pool and just sort of bring that night swimming aspect into it. And then day three was a really interesting experience because you can rent different studios, of course, like Hollywood's a stone's throw away.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this studio that it was a rain room.
A rain room.
So basically you go kind of in this basin and it looks like a warehouse and you turn on a tap and then you get heavy rain or however you want the rain to fall. So I had an umbrella for some scenes. And then the idea towards the end of the piece was to kind of come undone. So what if I break down? So what if I'm emotional and this water affects me? And it was really baptismal in a strange way.
Mm.
It was so, I hate when my hair is wet.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, obviously, like a cat, obviously, I wash my hair. But I hate that feeling, especially when my hair was done with the day and the shoot. And then what I was wearing, you know, feeling that water, like, drench me. Like, it was supposed to be an emotional scene. It was a little bit emotional, which is cool.
It certainly was.
I think it just, everything worked together with the different areas that we filmed.
I was reading both Modern Natives and watching some of these short films at your website. These films, are they your visualization, or are you handing over your words to someone to come up with the concept and they storyboard it and go? Or is it a little bit of both? You've got a shared vision, or you've got a vision and you work with someone to bring it to fruition?
I write the poem. find the location, storyboard everything, and then depending who I'm working with, they might have an idea here or there, but I really am hands-on with everything. And there's so many documents, you know, locations and what we're going to do and what the message is. And then with the Bones of Our Never Sisters, that was the first time I really lip-synced. It's a preview on my website, andreagrant.com, right now. But then the film will be released. It's just entering the film festival circuit right now. So they like to kind of have first dibs on the entire film. But there's a lot more than the trailer. It was interesting because I shot it in two sets where there was one filmmaker that shot in last September. And it's really, really hot. It's still summer and very bright. And I felt that it wasn't finished. It needed to have some moodiness. So I had someone else shoot some scenes end of January. And, you know, I got to burn a poem in a fire pit, have like different light qualities. So it shows a range, the actual film.
Oh, wow. When someone watches this, they could be thinking it's just filters or whatever the case is. That's really interesting, fascinating, I think, actually, to wait for another time of year to get a different mood in the air. You know, the same time of day, but a different light and therefore a different feel. That's very incredible.
Thank you.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, took a lot of planning.
Yeah. For this edition of KVC Arts, it's been conversation with Andrea Grant. We've been hearing about various aspects to Andrea, her films and more. Her latest book is Modern Natives, an illustrated collection of reimagined Coast Salish myths, and we'll hear more about it on the next KVC Arts. In the meantime, be sure to check out andreagrant.com with photography, blogs, poetry, films, and much, much more. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Andrea Grant and to Brianna Walther for setting it all up. Here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Jessica Greenwell, Tony Lopez, and Shireen Awad. Many past shows can be found through Spotify, iTunes, NPR One, or many other podcast sites, and more still at kvcr.org/arts. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support. And I do want to mention once again, thanks to everyone who contributed during our recent spring membership campaign. And if you weren't able to, please give any time of the year, day or night. It's a quick, quick, easy process at kvcr.org/support. And thanks again.